Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Dom and Kirsten podcast. And if you're thinking that's just another careless faux pas from Dom, just such a classic lack of professionalism, have more faith, because it's Colin who is out today. Not quite sure where he is. He possibly hard at work, possibly just engorged on Thanksgiving turkey, possibly just having a nap. No one knows for sure. But regardless, I'm very pleased to have in his stead my evil twin, Kirsten McInnes.
Wait, I'm the evil twin?
What did you think you were?
I feel like you're more evil than I am.
Well, when you self-identify as a devil, I feel like you can't use that excuse anymore.
Well, okay, here's the thing. Did I choose to identify as the devil, or did I have it thrust upon me, okay?
I feel like there's some amount of leaning in going on here, though.
You have to be a good sport. I'm also just really worried people aren't going to be able to tell us apart. You know, we're two blonde Canadian Sagittarius political scientists. It's too much. It's going to be really confusing for people.
Yeah, it is Sagittarius season, or so I'm told. Like, we're in Jupiter, or Jupiter's in us, or something's going on there.
Yeah, it is Sagittarius season. Jupiter is in Sagittarius. This only happens once every like 12 years or something. It's a really good time for us to be making big changes in our lives. And we're supposed to have good luck, which I won two raffles today. So it could be real. I don't know.
So I didn't know anything about this. So I did my homework diligently, as I do. And I saw this article that you linked about it. And the first line is... After swimming in the depths of oversexed and taboo-loving Scorpio for over a year, your lucky ruling planet Jupiter finally returns to its home sign for the first time in 12 years. I didn't know Scorpios were so sketchy.
Scorpios are like, it's a real problem. I don't know. No offense to any Scorpios out there. I really don't think that your podcast listeners really care about astrology. And I only probably like a quarter believe in it. So, well, I don't know.
You shouldn't make assumptions about them. They just don't know that they're interested in it yet.
Well, everybody, please go online, look up your full natal chart. It's not just your sun sign. Like, figure it out. It's fine.
Yeah, as this article also says, trust me, it's no coincidence our friendly neighborhood Sag, or Sag, don't know if the G is hard or not, loves...
It's Sag.
Thank you. Loves traveling, learning, and living life to the fullest. You can always blame their ruling planet Jupiter for their insatiable FOMO. No offense, Sagittarius. Well, some taken, first of all. But I feel like I'm learning a lot about myself today.
Well, I'm really happy that that's happening for you. It's about time. And you gotta learn up before your birthday.
It does say here that I love learning, so I guess it's all coming together.
Your philosophy interest and degree also is in line. That it's a big interest for Sagittarius, so I guess it's real. Never mind, guys, I'm 100% in.
This really is a revelation. But anyway, I feel like we are here to talk some Survivor at some point, so we should dive into that. So it feels like everybody is completely in love with this season, and Colin likes to say that if there's anyone who wouldn't be, who would have a contrarian take, it would be me. I feel like, if anything, it would be you. So are you on board with the hide mind here, or do you have your own takes on things?
I mean, first of all, some offense is taken. No, I'm loving this season, and I have like a circle of friends here who don't watch reality TV, but they used to, and I'm just constantly trying to get them back on board. And I'm like, guys, Survivor's so good. You have to watch it. And it's not working. They're not going to start. But I'm so on board with the season. My only complaint is that we didn't get more of Queen Natalie, of course.
Yeah, I guess it's a blessing that there are so many other things going on that Natalie feels like she was on a different season at this point. But that's a great problem to have. So that's a shame. But everything else about the season seems to be going great so far.
Yeah, most of the people left. I don't hate. Seems like it's going in a good direction. I'm really excited now that the numbers have evened up a little bit. See what happens. I can't complain.
What has been surprising about it so far? Because preseason, we avoided having any takes about anyone because I was moving continents. But everybody else, they go through the usual preseason rigmarole of thinking who do we think is going to succeed, who's going to crash and burn horribly. Were there any positive or negative surprises for you this time around?
Well, I know in the preseason stuff, I remember finding Jeremy to be really funny. And then on the show and in his exit press, I was like, oh no, he's just mean, not funny. So that was surprising. I really loved Gabby. And so it's not a surprise that I still love her. I remember really not liking Carl in the preseason and thinking that he would not make it far at all. But he's really surprised me. I feel like for the most part, people are living up to expectations or exceeding them. I don't think I saw Angelina as being so much of a like a villain type character, but I don't even know if she counts as a villain. But
Angelina has been a revelation so far, because I assumed either she would be this very like hyper competent managerial type who would do really well just in the game, or she would crash and burn the way that Jeremy and a few other people did. But instead, we've had this glorious mix of both, where she tries to play the first type of game, ends up playing the second, and yet gets saved week after week. So we just get to see more and more of it.
Well, and it's like she's messy, but she's messy in like a very genuine human way. And I feel like it's really refreshing to get to see that about all of the people on the season.
Would you describe yourself as more mean but not funny, or messy in a human way, or both?
I feel attacked. Wow. I feel like I'm probably more messy, but in a human way, because it seems nicer. Anyways.
It's good. It means the people on the season are relatable and you can see yourself in them.
I'm on it. Okay, in this episode, when Angelina was like crying over a veggie burger, I was like, this is the most relatable thing. Like literally today, I had a veggie burger for lunch. And if someone told me I had the possibility to have another one and then took it away, I could cry right now. It's like, I'm not even starving.
It really is relatable content. But diving into this episode in particular, then, we have this usual like debrief when we get back from Tribal. And this is in the aftermath of Davey putting a fast one on everyone, but especially the Goliaths. And he gives this speech about, I hope the game has evolved enough that we can respect each other's game without taking it personal. And that didn't seem very Davey-esque, but we've heard literally that same confessional like multiple times a season by now. So you kind of expect it. And then we cut to Davey with the whole like wrestling takedown of John in real time. And I love seeing Davey just so enthusiastic about everything.
Yeah, no, that confessional was amazing. And it really reminded me of during Celebrity Big Brother when Brandi Glanville had, I think it's Omarosa shoes. I don't really remember Celebrity Big Brother that well. I love that. But I'm curious because they show him back at camp being like, you know, the game has evolved. I hope you guys don't take it personally. But I feel like they didn't really show us people's reactions to that too much. And I'm wondering how that actually really went over.
Yeah, they could have taken it super personal and we wouldn't know anything about it because they just didn't show anything about it. So I don't know if we're meant to read into what's not there ahead of the edit zone. But I don't know. That was kind of curious. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, I noticed that. So there it is.
Yeah. I love Davey. Loved his move last week. Loved the introduction here. Not so much a fan of Davey Rickenbacker talking about himself in the third person all the time. I think that could get old. But for now, yeah, that's a minor issue.
No, that's been old. Nobody should ever talk about themselves in the third person.
I didn't know if it was like a wrestling thing trying to emulate or make fun of John. But if we get more of that, then Davey and I are going to need to have a talk about things.
I can't wait. I would like to be a fly on the wall for that conversation between you and Davey.
I would just love to talk to Davey anyway, just about Survivor or anything else. But that would be a point of conversation, I feel. But in the next scene, after we don't see any more of this, Allison is having this powwow with some of the other Goliaths. And she tells Kara that she promised all the Davies that she would flip things around and she hasn't. And when you promise them once and you don't do that, it kind of makes sense. After the second or third time you do it, then you get this boy who cried wolf situation where they're just not going to believe you anymore. And she's also conscious of the fact that she's been lying in the shadows so far. She's won a challenge and that's great, but she really needs a move on her resume, which seems to be the go-to buzzword these days. And this is maybe the time to do it, or so she thinks. And so we have a bunch of Goliaths all with their own things going on. And it feels like all of them want to flip, but none of them can really find the right moment to do it. And eventually one of them is going to break and then all the rest are going to break. But so far they've stuck together remarkably cohesively, I guess.
Well, they have, but it's just so weird because there's been so many moments where it really seems like they are going to flip and it is going to crack wide open. And then they all just get afraid and decide to go with the, you know, what's safe and what's, you know, probably, you know, optimally a little bit more, I don't know, it's probably a better move, but I don't know. I just feel like a lot of people are setting themselves up to go to like Final Five, Final Four, but not necessarily for the win.
Yeah.
From that side, I don't know.
Maybe they're doing a great job of just setting up decoy boosts. Because in the past, you'd have what seemed to be a pretty clear-cut outcome. And then you get one confessional just jammed in there 5 minutes before the end of, oh, well, actually, such and such makes a really good point, and maybe I should consider flipping. And you know that they considered it and they're never going to go through with it. But this time, it really feels like they're going to. And I've been personally hoodwinked several times in a row by the editors. I thought, like, are they going to flip on Angelina? Is Angelina going to flip on them? Is something else going to happen? And time and time again, it's the Goliaths just actually, even though they hate each other, as Mike White said, they're just sticking together and actually being pretty effective when it comes down to it.
Yeah, and I mean, it is, I think it is the right thing to be doing at this point. It's not the most entertaining way to do it. Obviously, the entertainment has come the last few from, you know, the David's pulling off a crazy move, but it does make sense to do. Can we also just for a second talk about how Mike White is like, I need to relate to these young Goliaths, so I'm just going to start swearing more because that's how young people talk.
It really is like that. How do you do, fellow kids, kind of thing. It's really not convincing at all. I'm not a big Mike White fan. I don't like Mike especially, but I loved when the Nullifier came out at Tribal and you had these really vivid facial expressions and everybody else just like looks gobsmacked. And then Mike White just sits there blinking rapidly, not moving his face one iota. And it's a really nice contrast.
I just try to avoid looking at Mike White's face whenever I can, so I don't know.
that is
but yeah, no, he's
that is mean more so than funny, I will say, if I had to pick one of the two.
Well, Katie, I don't think this needs to be a recurring thing where we rank the things that I say. But no, it's like he's trying to relate to Alec, who's just like this young waiter, and he's like, we can't be little bitches. It's like, oh, okay, so this is how we talk now. Awesome.
Bitches is one of the strongest cuss words, as Mike would put it, that he knows. So that's he's got to really get all the big weapons out there. As all of this is going on, we have Alec talking about wanting to keep the Goliath strong, but maybe mixing things up again. And people seem to be loving Alec this season. I know you love Alec. I love Alec. And everyone seems to be complaining as well that he's banned from the reunion. And why can't CBS just get over it and lift the ban and invite him there and in all his glory? And I don't know that he actually was banned in the first place, because as far as I can tell, in what little homework I've done, the only source of that seems to be a TMZ article from months ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, CBS is not going to make a statement on it at all, right? Because at that point in time, nothing had been announced. It's not like they're going to make a statement and then confirm that it's true, you know? Like, they kind of have to try to just keep it tight-lipped. And if he's at the... I would assume that if he was banned from the reunion, they would have really been minimizing him more in the show. Like, I feel like we've seen too much of him for him to be missing from the reunion. Like, the average people watching the show don't know anything about the situation, and they would be like, where is he? And it would just cause more problems than it's worth, I think.
Yeah, I don't know how much lag time there is between the episodes being edited and them airing, so maybe they wouldn't have time to fully cut him down or minimize him. But yeah, I think they would do that, and maybe if the rumors weren't true, then they would want to come out and issue a denial. But then if you're doing that, you're kind of giving attention to TMZ in the first place, which is exactly what they want. So maybe they will just stay mum regardless, and we're going to get to finale night, and just Alec's going to be there, presumably in some amazing outfit, and it's going to be a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I think we should all expect the worst but hope for the best in this situation.
It's a good life philosophy in general. But as these Goliaths are talking, Dan is not talking. He is just sulking alone on the beach. And he's like looking over at them and they're looking over at him and trying to figure out what he's so upset about. And by the time that Kara finally comes over and talks to Dan, because he's not going to go over and talk to them, it becomes clear that like there's some kind of tantrum going on. Like Dan is not having a good time, and for Kara, she doesn't feel like she can control him or that he's really that useful to him anymore. And this was the start of a big breakout episode for Kara, and we went from last week saying, okay, Kara's seems to be like playing a smart game, she's one to watch maybe, but still a dark horse, to now every single person seems to agree that she's the front runner, that you know it's her season to lose now.
Yeah, this was a great night for Kara. And Dan was just such a friggin' baby there. Like, to me, it was almost like a comparison to like HOH-itis, where he got to use power at one point, and so he just assumes that now everyone's gonna come to him about everything. It's like there's three people. Just literally go talk to them. I was so happy when Kara called him out. It was like, you're being emotional. It's nice to see that being, you know, said to a male rather than a female for like once in our lives. It was just, he's such a brat, and Kara is amazing.
Kara is kind of locked into the same dilemma that all of the other Goliaths are in, where they all want to jump ship and Kara wants to be the first one to do it, but it's a question of waiting for the right time. And she decides to accelerate that process and move it all forward by telling Alec and Allison about Dan's second idol. And it's come out in what little exit press or like mid-season check-ins we've had so far that Dan's second idol was known to a lot of people already, because apparently the last night before the merge, or the I guess the morning of the merge, Dan's swap tribe was all going on this idol hunt, and Dan was just like lazing around back at camp, and they figured the only reason he would do that is if he had an idol already. And then when they heard the rumors separately about him having an idol, they realized it couldn't be the same one, so maybe he does have two. So this was an open secret, it sounds like, but even so, her telling them about it is a big sign of trust, and I think a pretty clear signal that she does actually want to make something happen. And flash forwarding to the vote reveal, I don't know how much of them voting for Angelina was premeditated or just a response to the vote seal being used, but it seemed like she was actually ready to pull the trigger here.
Well, it does seem like she really was committed to that. Like, if you look at her face when she's told the plan has changed back again, it seems pretty clear that she really did want to make that move. I still feel like it's too early. Like, she definitely could have, you know, skated by for a couple more votes, because he's always going to go before her.
Yeah, and I was wondering, like, what the real motivation behind this was, because from what we've seen of Kara, she is smart and level-headed enough not to just be frustrated at Dan, and that's a major impetus to want to get him out. She must have some, like, long-term goal in mind, but it has to be a long-term goal, because we have 11 people left. We're just past the merge, and there's a lot of game left to be played. So losing someone who seems like, for all of his faults, he's a pretty loyal ally, and he's very loyal to you, and he's in love with you. If you're willing to cut that loose, that's a big statement of confidence in your own position. And it's, I have to imagine some of the others were thinking that.
Yeah, I mean, she must have, you know, more concrete deals than what we have seen to feel confident enough to make that move. She just has to.
Right, because I guess you don't want to be lumped in a pair with Dan, and that's a big threat to everybody else. But also, it's like, if you're willing to get rid of that, then that also makes you more threatening, because you're saying, I am so well positioned in the game and I'm so confident in myself that I can afford to just let Dan go and even maybe burn his jury vote on the way out if he's mad at me, and I'm going to be fine regardless. So if I'm like Alec or Allison, I'm looking at that and thinking either she's wrong and maybe she's less reliable than I thought, or she's right and she's now the actual biggest threat in the game, regardless of whether Dan's still there or not.
Well, and it could be a thing where she wanted to get rid of him early jury so that he has a little bit more time to kind of get over the hurt feelings and be a little bit less upsetty when it's time to cast his final vote. And it could also be where she's worried that he'll be a target but then win immunity and she'll go home by default. So, I mean, can't really say, but there's motivations on either side. I don't even know.
So my read on Dan is he's the type to get up there in front of the jury and like vent his frustrations about what Kara did to him and then like follow through and vote for her regardless. Like, he wants to say his piece, but then once he has, he'll go through with what he wants to do and with what she wants him to do, and it'll all be fine. But I wonder if all that focus on that relationship getting broken up is a kind of signal that we actually should be paying attention to Kara, because so far she's been fairly quiet, or they've at least kept her in the shadows, and she's getting her breakout episode just when the guy that she's been tied to for the whole game is getting blindsided. So it feels like she really has momentum now.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that, you know, next week we get to see Kara come out, you know, more into her own and not have to be in the shadows as much. Although, you know, I think it's always better to hide a little bit longer if possible. But I mean, if she felt that he was too much of a liability, then I guess we have to trust her judgment.
So the next event, I guess, in the episode that we get to is the reward challenge. And usually, like, whenever there's some like team reward or something, it's not that interesting. You're kind of loop, not really paying attention. But I know you were very vocal about the proper crawling technique for this challenge.
Okay, so I have a very unique perspective on this because I grew up on army bases. So whenever they would do sports day at school, there would always be like a couple army guys and they would teach us proper obstacle course techniques. So anytime I see someone crawling under a net and they're not doing it properly, it makes me so mad for no reason. But you need to use your elbows and your knees because it helps you, it kind of gives you more clearance below the net and you can really move fast. Like, if you watched, I think Davey was actually doing it properly, but he, well, close to properly, and he was way faster than the others, even though he did come through last, because I think he got under the net last.
I imagine it's also safer too, because if you're going through on your hands and knees and you're like frantically scrabbling trying to get through, there's a big risk that like one of your fingers gets splayed or something, and then you're just out for the count for the rest of the challenge.
Well, yeah, and I also think that the crawling technique might be based around crawling under barbed wire, so that could also be a part of it. But like, you can really move if you use your elbows and knees. I have always said that I'm pretty sure I would probably be really good at like the snake challenge, because I'm already really good at moving without using my arms and legs.
Or just because you're a snake, that also works.
Wow.
So after we get past this, they go to the Bula Burger Bar. There's some like nice alliterative title. The people who won get to chow down on burgers. The ones who don't get to stew back at camp. And I always love it when the losing team is just like angrily cooking the remaining supplies back at camp, just like spite the team who won, and also just to comfort eat their way out of the situation.
Yeah, they're like, if this isn't enough rice, we're making more rice. Like, this is it. I feel like I don't like, though, when the teams for these challenges are done randomly. I feel like it's a little bit more interesting when the teams are chosen in some way, or when the reward challenge is individual and then you get to see who they pick and that has a little bit more impact. I would have liked to see something along those lines.
Yeah, there's always more room for petty drama when there's a schoolyard pick, because I know a few episodes ago, I think it was Angelina who was picked in the last round for one of the rewards, and you couldn't tell if it's like we actually have no faith in her ability in the challenge, or we just don't like her, or her like social standing is so far down by now that we can afford to just let her go last, and she'll be upset about it, but who cares? And it's always fun to like wonder about that, whereas if it's a random draw, then there's literally nothing to wonder about. You just, you know, you sit there and it's just a fact of the challenge.
Yeah, well, and then the one team was just so much stronger physically. It didn't really seem like it was that much of a, even though it kind of came back in the puzzle, it didn't seem like it was that much of a competition. It wasn't that interesting.
Yeah, and so I guess if it's a schoolyard pick, if people are picking based on wanting to win the challenge and they all seem to be just slavishly wanting the burgers, then yeah, you're going to put that aside and do that. But after all this is said and done, we get another idol finding scene, because Davy's idol from the previous week has gone back into play, and everyone knows that, so everyone's hunting around. Watching this in real time, what did you think the odds were that a woman would find this idol?
Well, I thought it was pretty low, because I no longer have any confidence that that's happening this season. The minute you see like a man talking about looking for an idol, you're like, okay, cool. So they're going to find it. It's not going to be a woman, and awesome. I was absolutely livid, though. If a man had to find it, at least it wasn't worst case scenario. So it's fine.
Let's jump back to that confessional from Angelina in the very first episode then, because that garnered a lot of attention at the time. And a lot of people took it as a prediction, or almost like a statement of fact, that a woman would find an idol this season. Maybe not Angelina, maybe that would be the irony of it, that she'd be the one to voice it, but maybe Gabby or someone else would end up getting it instead. But as it turns out, I don't know what the number of advantages is, whether it's like 4, 5, 6, but either way, we are 0-4 that number so far on the season in terms of women finding them. And with Dan's idol going back in next episode, I wonder if that trend is going to continue.
Well, and I feel like even from when they showed that scene, when it's immediately followed up by Dan finding an idol, it's a little bit of a signal of like, well, it could pan out, it might not pan out. After so many of it not having the relevance, I'm kind of losing faith a little bit. But it does seem like all these advantages and idols in this season are getting played a lot more quickly than they have in past seasons. So maybe this is just a season where so many idols are found, maybe a woman will finally find one towards the end. That would be nice, but I don't know. I'm starting to lose faith.
What did you make of them including that scene in the first place then? Because I saw a few complaints that why even acknowledge that this is a thing that happens in the show if this is only going to be reinforced or confirmed by the events of the season? It's like you're acknowledging that this is a thing and doing nothing to correct that thing and just watching it play out again.
I mean, I love that they included it. I think that it's important to always, you know, shine a light on those kinds of discrepancies whenever you can. And it could be a thing where this is the first time they've had that confessional with the statistics. They wanted to use it and it doesn't pan out this season, but maybe there are things that they're going to do with hiding the idols in the future that maybe will make it a little bit more balanced. It's nice to see, you know, gender issues of any kind actually being acknowledged on reality TV.
Yeah, because they acknowledge it, but they can't really get into any theories as to why that is. So they, I guess if Angelina was giving those theories in her confessionals, then maybe they'd have that material to work with. But it's easy to say this is the fact that, you know, you look at the stats and 14% or whatever the figure is have gone this way versus these are some of the underlying reasons why that might be, like the division of labor at camp or just social expectations within the game. Like it's harder to get into the underpinnings of it and much easier to just acknowledge it, pat yourself on the back for having done so, and then just move on to the next thing.
Well, and that's also super likely, but it would be really nice if they could just change things up a little bit. Like they know it's an issue, so I feel like now it's irresponsible not to try and do something about it.
Well, also, it can just be content for Angelina, right? Because it shows her in the premiere when we're getting to know everybody as someone who thinks about those issues and also knows a survivor. Like she's done her homework, she's a fan, she knows the stats. And that one confessional maybe gives you a better picture of who Angelina is than yet another confessional of someone saying, I'm a super fan, I've loved Survivor my whole life, I've been watching since I was 9. Like this is almost a better way to convey that if that's what you're going for.
Yeah, I definitely think that this whole season, just the storytelling and the character building has been done so well that certainly could also be the motivation there.
Yeah.
I don't try to pretend to know what CBS wants or is aiming for.
Do you think there's maybe a larger hint that like you don't need advantages to win a season and maybe one of the women will go on to win and it's going to be despite this like idol bonanza or all of these twists and advantages flying around around them?
I mean, I would be so on board with that. So I'm going to go with that fan fiction and hope it's real.
It would be in line with the Kara wins theory that everyone seems to be jumping on now. I'm not sure if Gabby or Angelina are still in play, but Kara at least, or Allison maybe, that could work too. Just as one like final thought on the topic, do you have your own theories as to why it is? Or are there any theories you've seen that you agree with more than others?
I mean, I think that a lot of it, I mean, obviously, I've never been there, so I can't say exactly what the situation is like. But I do think a lot of it comes back to, you know, women, you know, being more at camp and doing more of those domestic tasks. And then I know when Kellen was on the recap on RHAP, she mentioned that even on Survivor, the women often use the opportunity to go to the washroom together to like talk strategy. And it was kind of like, you know, when women go to the bathroom at the bar together. And so it could just be where the women aren't on their own as much, or it's seen more suspicious if they go off on their own. And I think that is something worth, you know, thinking of, but a lot of people a lot smarter than me have talked on that issue at great length.
Yeah, I see the division of labor point being brought up a lot, and it does, intuitively, it seems plausible, but at the same time, you have guys like Christian who, I don't know if he fits into those expectations. Like, I don't think anyone's demanding that Christian go out and like chop firewood and bring stuff back or whatever, and yet we see him conducting this breadth first search, which we'll get onto in a second, because this stuck in my craw a little bit, but you see him and a lot of these other kind of less typically masculine types is still going out and finding the idols at a much higher rate.
But I feel like Christian's such a weirdo, and a lot of other people like in that type of archetype, they seem so odd that they could maybe get away with things that others couldn't. And I also feel like it could be a thing too where a man, it's seen more acceptable to be like, oh yeah, like I really like haven't pooped in 3 days, like I really gotta try or something like that, whereas there's still like issues where maybe if a woman tried to say the same thing, people would be like, oh no, don't want to hear about it, that kind of thing.
So the gender dynamics of constipation on Survivor,
I feel like it's still a thing where a lot of people don't want to accept the fact that women go to the bathroom, and that could definitely play into it.
But anyway, we get onto this breadth first search, and I know a while back we had this kind of shared moment when Christian was talking about gerrymandering, using that term in a very like non-specific way, and I feel like this is kind of coming up again where people hear him using a phrase that's very like specific to an area of study or something, and that's taken as further sign of Christian's sparkling intellect, when if you actually look at how the term's being applied, I don't know if it matches up very well.
One, I don't know anything about robotics, so I don't want to sit there and pretend that I know how that is used in that field. But I feel like it's just very intuitive with the way that idols have been hidden lately to just go to the major areas and look around lightly if things are going to be tied with brightly colored, you know, yarn or whatever. Like, it just doesn't seem that groundbreaking to me.
Yeah, I guess it's not like the concept is completely off or anything, but there is a cost, right? So if you're trying to go through the entire island and you're looking a little bit here and a little bit there, you still have to get from point A to point B. That's not like a frictionless thing. You have to put the time in to do that. And maybe if you spend some of that time looking in the area where you are already, or you take like a longer path, but where that path is more likely to contain the idol itself. So I think there are other considerations in play, and just saying, well, I looked a little bit here and a little bit here, and then magically I found it and I've revolutionized the strategy of finding idols. That seems a little bit much to me.
Well, and I really liked how when they were showing that segment, and he's like, I broke the island into segments and this, or sectors, sorry. And the sectors that they like show on the map are so, it's like, you know that they're not going in places that large, like in general. They make it seem like he's traveled miles and miles in every direction. He searched far and wide, and it's like, you know, it, like, there's no way it's that much room.
Yeah, they have all of these different segments light up on the map, and one of them is like this very dense forest copse on the top of the hill, and it's like, you're not going there. Don't pretend like you dabbled over there and had a look around, because you didn't. We don't need to pretend that.
We know that after the goat hunting in season 34, they're not allowed up there anymore, okay? Like, come on.
Is that like a wildlife refuge now?
I mean, I would assume that that's what's going on up there. I don't know. Yeah, they're just trying to avoid the men with spears, okay?
Anyway, Christian does end up finding the idol, and even the people who were hoping for either a woman to find it or someone else to find it, no one seems to be that upset. Like, Christian's social game seems as impeccable with the audience by now as it does with everybody out there.
Yeah, I feel pretty neutral towards it. I feel like he's at risk enough that he's probably going to have to use it on himself fairly soon. And it's not going to be as, like, it's not going to be something where he drags it to the end and then it helps him get to the final four and then he is triumphant. Like, I feel like it's not that serious.
Do you have any thoughts on him either as a character or as a player so far based on what we've seen?
I like Christian a lot. I just don't think I'm as high on him as everybody else. I just find him weird. Like, and not in, I don't know, because I'm weird too, but I just, it's the type of weirdness just doesn't call out to me the way it does to a lot of other people. I'm not as into it. So I don't understand why he's like the most beloved person, but I don't know. Maybe you meet him or you like look into his beautiful eyes and you just are drawn into them. And I'm just not seeing it. I don't really know.
We have mutual friends who have met Christian, and that's not a brag about that. It's a brag about them being our mutual friends. But they all testify that he seems like a wonderful guy in real life. So I trust their judgment on that, and also on most other things.
Yeah, I definitely trust them, and I just think it's maybe something that I'm not seeing because I've never actually interacted with him. He's really nice on Twitter, though.
Oh, he really is. Yeah, he seems like the type who is going to go out of his way to just engage with anyone and takes the time and really just is humbled by the whole experience and appreciates the fans are reaching out to him and enjoying seeing him on screen.
It genuinely might be something with me where when someone's that nice, I have a hard time believing it. It honestly, that could be it.
That story would check out. Do you have any thoughts on him as a player then? Because he's had an interesting journey so far and one which still hasn't ended. You know, the second chapter of that is being written as we speak.
Well, I feel like at the start, it seemed like he was, you know, fairly capable, definitely an above average player. But I feel like we've seen him out of the loop quite a bit. And so that makes me think that maybe, you know, socially he's good with everyone, but he's not great at pulling the information he needs to or using that information. It seems like he really rests a lot on Nick to help with the strategic decisions and get all of the information. And that, to me, is troubling for him as a player.
Yeah, it's an easy comment to make that he's in the same mold as like the Cochrans, and I guess like I don't even know who you would put in that basket, but he follows in the tracks that have been left by other players of that type. And in the past, those players were just lumped in that super nerd, super fan category, and you would assume that they wanted to be the mastermind, right? That they're going to be maybe socially not as adept as everyone else, and physically there's going to be lots of slapstick comedies. They fall flat on their faces. But when it comes to the strategy, that's their strength. That's what they're there for, and they're going to use their galaxy brains to overpower everyone else. And that really hasn't been the case. Like, Colquhoun himself, when he won, that was much more of a social thing, and people just liking him and finding him endearing enough and non-threatening enough that his sense of timing, as he put it, was able to strike before they realized what was going on. And then, like, with same thing kind of happened with Spencer in his first season, and then Christian. Now again, it's not like they're moving the chess pieces around and directing things, right? It's them being likable and people trusting them enough, and that's what's getting them further. It's not Christian like engineering some amazing double, triple idol play or anything like that.
Well, no, and what's nice about him though is it seems that he is, you know, completely comfortable in his own skin. He's not trying to have some sort of transformative moment on the show. And a lot of it, it boils down to, you know, other people in that archetype have succeeded in the past. And so he's perceived as more dangerous as a result, even though he might not actually be that similar in the end.
Do you put any stock in that David and Goliath point? Because we know from like various social science studies and from previous Survivor seasons that when you fix those labels on people, that they often try to play into those labels. And if you're a beauty or a no collar or whatever, maybe those aren't great examples, but when you fix these labels, you naturally feel this kinship to other people in that label more so than just being on the same tribe as them. And with David and Goliath, maybe that is, I mean, they definitely all talk about it enough. Maybe they do actually believe it and feel that sense of like solidarity, I guess.
Well, I feel like it's more so with this theme because I feel like there's something about being an underdog or feeling like you need to fight for things that, you know, give you a little bit more of an edge. And I feel like the Goliaths who they really fight against the label more because they don't want to be perceived as being handed things. Like, nobody wants people to think that they've had an easy path or that things come naturally to them. Like, people, well, maybe things come naturally to them, but like, people want to be seen as, you know, I've worked hard, I've succeeded on my own merits. And something with the David versus Goliath theme just really kind of puts you in that box of, oh yeah, we're the Davids. We fight for things. The odds are stacked against us, but we are going to keep fighting and we're going to come out on top. And I do think that with this theme over others, it's more of that than maybe with like a Brain Braun beauty. Is that the right order? I don't know.
Something like that. But do you buy into the theme at all? Because I know preseason, everyone was making fun of it. But they haven't backed down. They haven't apologized for that theme. And they've lent into it. They've doubled down. And now you don't see people complaining about it as much. And maybe that's because the season is so good that you're willing to give them a pass, or you kind of concede that point to them. But it feels like it actually is having an impact on the season. And it makes me wonder if they saw something that we don't. Like, is this a thing which is relevant in Survivor or even in life in a less like trite way?
I don't know if I buy into it, but they're certainly not going to apologize for it because it's so good. And I don't know if it's good because of it or in spite of it, but I'm not going to complain about it. And hopefully when we get David versus Goliath 2 in like 3 years, it's another good season.
It feels like a bit of a messy distinction because you, on the one hand, you have people who did start off with the worst lot in life or have had to face a lot of challenges. But then there's an element where a lot of the people who have done that successfully are built in such a way that they can handle those challenges. Like they're blessed with, I don't know, charm or physical ability or intelligence or these other things that make it easier to take down whatever stands in their way. And then I guess on the other side, you have Goliaths who have never had a hard time with things, but if they did, they would be in hot water because they just don't have those traits that would let them succeed against those obstacles.
Well, and it's just like in school where they're like, yeah, if you're smart early on and you don't try, then eventually you're going to get to the point where you have to try and you're not going to know how. But I don't find it easy to put people in the boxes of David versus Goliath, because it's like, at what point has someone overcome enough that now they're the Goliath? Like, it just seems so messy as a way to categorize people. And I think that they got lucky that it worked out as well as it did, but it's hard to do. And it's just like in the first episode when Allison was like, wait a second, I've worked really hard. And then it's, you know, Jeff Probst is going on about the concept of privilege, which I never would have thought I'd see in 2018. Like, it's just a really confusing way to categorize people, I think.
Well, their idea of overcoming those challenges seems to work against whatever, like, privilege adjacent thing Jeff was getting at, where, like, if you're talking about the advantages or disadvantages that groups just naturally have, or at least that they inevitably have within society based on how they're treated, then that kind of goes against the idea of, well, if you just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and work hard, you as a David can become a Goliath, and we can tie all the theme together so neatly.
Well, and that's reinforced by the fact that with these last two votes, when the Davids get their way, it's not like, it's partially because of things that they did, but it's also they needed, you know, the leg up or the extra help in the form of the advantages that they found or were from production. So it's not like they just pulled up their bootstraps and everything was okay. Like, they still needed that other factor.
Right. And I think there's, like, a much larger discussion to be had there, but I think that's a good time, or I think a good time for that is when the season's wrapped up and we've seen how everything actually does come together. Meanwhile, back on the episode, we have another Goliath get-together, and Allison seems to be going through the same process that she described to Gabby earlier, where she said that all of the Goliaths are wanting to make a move, but then backing out, or they're biding their time and waiting for the right moment, but they don't have the moxie to actually go with it. And she herself goes through that process in this episode, where she finally has this epiphany. She realizes the right move is actually to sit back and go with the flow for now, which may be a smart move, and it seems like it was a well-considered move, but those factors that she flagged up earlier on do still apply. Like, she does need this move that she can hang her hat on at the end. She does need to be cognizant that, like, she's not on the bottom of the Goliath group and will just get picked off. So she's in this weird, like, holding pattern at the moment. And that's a nice one. I wonder if you think there's any, like, Laurel-esque. She has the ability to make a move and clearly has the smarts to do it, but maybe will never end up following through.
That could definitely be the story for her, because every point about her just seems uncertain. Like, I feel like I haven't seen anything from her except for when she won that challenge where it wasn't just uncertain. She doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know if she should make a move or if she should not make a move. So that could definitely be a good comparison.
Yeah, I found with Laurel, like, she was thinking about things, and maybe it's just her manner and the way she delivers things, but Laurel never seemed to be agonizing over what to do or, like, overcome with the pressure of the situation. And I'm not saying Allison does either, but she maybe is more emotive, and you see that a lot more. Like, she wears her heart a little bit more on her sleeve.
Well, and I also think that Laurel had stronger bonds than what Allison seems to have. And so, like, with Laurel, it'll be like, ooh, do I make the move or do I not? Well, but I know that I can get this far with these people, versus it might not work out as well with the other people. Whereas I feel like Allison doesn't really have a great place to be on either side here.
So what do you think she's thinking her position is? Because I'm sure there are lots of Allison secret scenes out there that people can go out and devour. But just based on what we've seen on TV, where would you expect her to go down the line?
Honestly, I'm confused. I don't really know. Like, she could be the next person voted out and I wouldn't be surprised. And she could make it to the finale and I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know what to expect from her. And if people are expecting us to be going out and watching secret scenes, it's really hard in Canada, so they should, you know, not be racist against Canadians.
It's very easy to do in the States, and Colin has literally never done it. There's no excuse, and yet, you know, I always have to put the work in. From the UK, where it's not that easy to watch them either, for the record, Colin. Anyway, I feel like, though, regardless of what Allison does or doesn't do, she's not going to be blamed for the season's reception the way that Laurel was last time around. And, like, Laurel had a lot of hate directed at her. I want to say undeservedly, but it's like, you can't really deserve that level of hate. It's not justified under any circumstances. But there was a lot of just criticism, I guess, that, oh, she ruined the season, or she was too scared to make a move, and so on. And I feel like Allison is not going to get that to anywhere near the same degree. Is that just because the rest of the season, it seems so fluid and up for change, and people are enjoying it so much that they're not focusing on the negative? Or what do you think is going on there?
Well, I think that's definitely a big part of it. But at the same time, Allison hasn't ever been portrayed, at least to my knowledge, as, like, a huge fan of the game or involved in Survivor outside of, you know, maybe just watching the episodes once a week. Whereas, you know, Laurel came in with a lot of hype because she is a huge fan and had been very involved. And I think that people were able to kind of put themselves in Laurel's shoes and were like, well, I would do that differently. And that spurred a lot of the hate. So I think that that's probably a bigger factor than the actual fluidity of the season.
Because last time you had, every single time Kevin said Naveedy Strong, there would be this chorus going up of, oh, well, there she goes again. Like, Naveedy Strong, it's so boring. And yet now you have Mike and Allison and several others all saying, we got to keep the Goliaths tight. We got to stick with what we have. This is a smart plan. We'll go with it. And likewise, they're not getting anywhere near the same levels of hate there. So I'm not sure. Like, I'm glad. I don't think.
Yeah, Dom is telling everyone to go send hate. Oh my god.
But I don't know what could happen to the season at this point to drag it down to the levels that the Ghost Island was sent to.
I can't think of anything that would do that, and I don't want to think about anything that could do that, because I am enjoying this season and the overwhelming positivity.
It really is the season of positivity so far, and I hope it remains that way. We move on now to this, like, this advantage measuring contest where all the Davids like open up to each other over what they found. And I love that Carl just, he really wants to be included. It's like, guys, I have an idol nullifier. And it's like, okay, that's great, Carl. Nick, you have this vote seal, and Christian, you have this idol. And to be fair, those are the real headlines. Those are the biggest advantages. But I love that Carl, you know, is really just keen to be there and really enthusiastic to play this and make his move for himself.
Well, Carl is so excited to be having his Survivor experience, and he wants to be one of the cool kids in the David group. Like, I have this too. I found this. It's fine. Like, I'm part of it. I'm like, okay, cool, Carl. Like, it's fine. Go away.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe he used up that one bullet in the chamber too soon, because I don't know if this was a good time to use his nullifier. Like, the way it played out, obviously, it was great for TV. It was great for them. Dan goes home. Everyone is rejoicing, except for Dan. But I don't know if he could have kept that to himself. Like, was this really the smartest time to make use of that?
Yeah, I think he probably should have kept that to himself. But he had already told Nick. So it is possible that once it all started coming out, he felt like he had to also mention his, or else it would make him seem sketchy to Nick, who seems to be a crucial part of the season.
When that happens, I think there's some pressure on Carl, from them to use his advantage too. Because it's like, well, David used his idol for Christian. Like, surely you can use your idol nullifier to grease the wheels and move this along. But I'm thinking now, like, obviously it helps with getting Dan out if that's what you want to do. But next week, if the sides stay the same, looking at 5 versus 5, and that idol nullifier would be perfect in terms of making sure that the idol, which I'm sure will get found again, can't do anything to mess your vote up. And doesn't decrease your odds.
Yeah, they really could have gotten away without using it this time. But I guess they wanted to just make sure that it was a 100% sure thing that they would get what they wanted.
Did you like this as a concept, this whole idol nullifier thing?
I don't love it. I feel like it wasn't satisfying to see Dan, like, falling apart, seeing the votes get read when he, like, thought he had done everything right to be able to make it another 3 days. Like, I didn't find it satisfying. Jeff Probst seemed way too happy about it, and I was just like, I don't like this. Like, it ain't all that.
Yeah, even the people who wanted to see Dan get taken down in dramatic fashion in this blaze of glory, I don't know if they were fully satisfied with the way this happened. Because it's like, if you think someone's a villain and you want to see them meet their demise, you want there to be no excuses about the way that happened. You want it to be, they lost because they fucked up, and this is their decision and they're reaping the consequences of that. And instead, Dan did everything right. He realized he was receiving votes. He played his idol, and it would have entirely fit the script. But now, P.S., this idol nullifier is in play. And as he said in his final words, who's ever heard of an idol nullifier? Like, there's no way he could play around it. You're not going to try and maneuver around a twist which no one knew existed and which didn't exist until this season. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, even in the best possible outcome for the people rooting against Dan, I don't know if this is all that. And for everybody else, it's like, well, why did this need to be there in the first place?
Well, first of all, I'm really upset that you didn't say doggone like Dan did when he was talking about the idol nullifier, because I was really, you know, anticipating that in your accent. But it's one of those things where, you know, the more advantages, the more things that are pushed in, the more conservatively you know, savvy game players are going to be. And it really does take away some of the entertainment, you know, moving forward. And it just puts an asterisk on Dan's game where he can be like, well, yeah, but maybe I would have won if it weren't for that idol nullifier, which like probably not the case, but he can always, you know, rest on that. And I don't like that he has that option. I wish that he had just been taken out, you know, properly so that it wouldn't be there. Because like, I feel like we'll see Dan again because he was the first one this happened to.
And honestly, I'm kind of on board with that, but I understand that some people aren't. But to me, the most aggravating thing about that doggone idol nullifier is that it doesn't work as advertised. This is the problem. And it's frustrating to me when you watch the episode and both Jeff and the contestants, including Carl, and then everyone live streaming the episode, and then also people talking about the episode afterwards, all seem to have these misconceptions about the power that it actually has and how it's going to be used most of the time. Because I think people see it's an idol nullifier and they assume it's just like another version of an idol, or it's like in the same family of twist as an idol, when really it isn't. Because with the idol, like you have all this suspense, you have these dramatic moments coming out, and the only purpose of the nullifier is to dampen those down. Like what we saw here was the 1 in 100 scenario for the idol, where like the guy in the majority after an idol's already been played, you know, like this is the only way it can really work that like that. Whereas most of the time, you think back to last week, if any of the Goliaths had the idol nullifier, it's like, okay, so we're going to use the nullifier on Christian, and what would have been and was this amazing moment in the season where this fantastic blindside suddenly just fizzles out, the balloon gets popped, and instead it's just a routine vote again.
Yeah, it's something that in general is just a tool that a majority alliance can use to maintain their majority. It's not always going to be this exciting, and even when it is this exciting, it's kind of, it just takes the wind out of the sails of an already exciting moment.
And because they hit the snake eyes this time, I think we're going to see it again. I think they'll...
Yeah, no, we definitely are going to see this again.
And then it's going to work the way that it usually works the other 99 times, and then we'll never see it again after that, because they'll realize what, you know, the fundamental flaw with the concept, hopefully, at least. But we'll see. So as all of this is happening, Nick is going to steal Allison's vote. And this is a heads up to the Goliaths that the tables are about to be turned on them conclusively. And did you read anything into them stealing Allison's vote in particular? Or was that just to get people thinking? Which apparently they are, because I've seen a lot of theories about this this week.
Well, so my original thought when watching the first time was, oh, they're going to try and make them think that Allison is the target. So maybe the idol gets used on her, or, you know, just try to misdirect them in some way. But then I read today Josh Wiggler's interview with Nick in the Hollywood Reporter, and Nick said that he had wanted to take Allison's because she was fun to troll, which I hate that so much, but also because hopefully they would use the idol on the wrong person, and then the idol nullifier would never come out, and it would look like it was his move using the vote steal more so than anybody else's, whereas Carl gets a lot of credit with the nullifier in this case.
Right. I guess in the era of big moves, just making a move that is big, that is a big move. It doesn't matter if it accomplished anything, you just want to be seen to do something. And that's kind of the same dilemma that Allison herself was flagging up, where it was like, I know maybe it wouldn't be smart to do something right now, but there's a pressure to do something and to be able to say that you did something. They steal Allison's vote, right? So if you're stealing someone's vote, most of the time you don't want it to be someone who you... Hold on, let me work through this in my own head quickly. If there's a tie, you don't want to steal the vote of the person you're voting for, because then they can't vote, which I assume means you can't vote. So I guess that's a sign that they're not voting for Allison. So if she did have an idol, then she wouldn't play it. But then, like, you can't really have a tie this time, so that doesn't come into play. So I don't know. Like, it seems weird, because you want to have a plan going into the tribal, right? And when... They're not expecting a vote steal. They're not expecting a vote steal on Allison. I don't know if seeing that a minute before the votes actually cast is enough to send them into this tizzy and make everything, make the votes or the idol shift around again. I don't know if there's enough time for that to happen.
You just used like 7,000 words, and I honestly don't even know what you said. That was so much. I feel like the Goliaths should have been suspecting something because literally all of the Davids came in so confident to tribal council. Like in the scene where they're walking in, like you can tell that they all just feel so steady and so fine when they had absolutely no business feeling that confident unless something was going on. So the fact that, you know, that didn't seem to be more of a plot point, I think is a bad sign.
Yeah. Last week we had Davy with that big like Cheshire cat grin when the big reveal happened. And this time all the Davies were wearing that. Like Gabby wasn't even crying, which should be a red flag in itself. It feels like they, as you said earlier, they have momentum now, right? And they feel, okay, this wasn't just a one-off thing and now we're back on the bottom. We might actually have a shot at taking this all the way to the end.
And also Gabby's space buns were really cute too. So just for the record.
Sure. Nick plays his vote seal and you see this conference happen with the Goliaths who were going to flip earlier. Kara's nodding over to Alec and Allison and they're whispering to each other. And I was wondering if that was when their votes actually changed. And the only reason that they don't vote with the Goliaths is because they knew, well, it's 6-5 anyway. It's a lost cause. We may as well hedge against like some other idol happening or in case they split the vote. So then it can be Angelina instead of one of us. Or if they were on board previously and this was a plan the whole time, but that was just like the catalyst to lock it in.
Well, and that's definitely what I took from it was that they maybe went into tribal with, if it seems like something's going down, we'll change our votes to Angelina and that should protect us in case something crazy happens like last time. And that's what I got from it. And then there's also when Allison's vote gets stolen, Dan asks Kara, you know, do I play the idol on Allison? And I feel like Kara pretty clearly is like, no, play it on yourself. So then she kind of gets the best of both worlds where she shows she's willing to flip and then she gets to keep her very close ally who's willing to go home before her.
Do you think there's going to be some backlash now that they did vote for Angelina? Because that's the kind of thing which always gets flagged up in a preview, but maybe doesn't always amount to anything.
I don't know if it's going to amount to anything meaningful, but I think it will be very entertaining.
Oh, definitely. And I'm glad that it's going to be fun to see like Angelina and Kara arguing for the first time as well, because they were part of that really tight alliance on the first episode. And then I don't think we've ever seen them interact since that moment, right?
Yeah, I don't think they've been on screen together outside of tribal councils or, you know, competitions.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, until the glorious birth of Gabison, I guess, in this episode. It feels like this season is not passing the Bechdel test most of the time. But I don't know, maybe that's turning around.
Well, no, it certainly hasn't up to this point, and hopefully we can turn that around. It's very disappointing how few women are left right now.
And one of those, Angelina, she had a very quiet week. It feels like there's been a lot of heat on her. She was the focus of attention for most of the past month or so. And now she's just kind of there. So maybe it's a good thing that she gets a breather. She's not at the center of everything. But does she actually have any power anymore? Because it feels like, again, no one really is listening to her or kind of bringing her into their plans.
Yeah, well, and it just, even in the moments where it seems like she does have power, which it's been a while, it seems like her main method for getting her way is basically whining, which is relatable, but not always the best way to go about things.
She was the most Goliath strong of anyone, right? And especially with John gone now. And yet she's at the bottom of the Goliath group. So it's like she's the most vocal cheerleader for a group that doesn't really care about her anymore. And so you might expect she would be the one trying to flip over and make something happen. But instead, she's standing ground and all of the people who are above her in her own alliance are trying to jump ship instead.
Yeah, she definitely should be the one who's making that move, I think.
But I guess if they recover and the Goliaths take control again, then she can sell that as, okay, all of you were looking for parachutes and I was here the whole time banging the same drum from day one. And that might be the one thing that like they have to grudgingly respect, even if they don't like her as a person.
Yeah, but I feel like she would be more likely to passive aggressively be like, I was Goliath strong and you guys wrote my name down. What is going on? This is not acceptable. And then it's just going to rub people the wrong way anyways.
Which I am absolutely here for. And I'm sure you are too.
I mean, I want something to go her way. I feel like I'm sad for her.
It was fun watching with a group of like casual, semi-casual, semi-invested viewers last week and just seeing the division about their views on Angelina, because some of us were really just cheering for her, or like cheering for her semi-ironically just to see her and the way people react to her in the game. And then there are people who just hated Angelina. They just despised her with every fibre of their being. And so she was almost the biggest source of conflict in our watch party and not just on the island out there.
I don't understand the hatred. Like, I could understand if she's not your favorite or not your type of person. I don't understand the hatred. I don't get it.
Yeah, Angelina, she seems someone who you can love to hate more so than actually hate, versus there have been people in the past who you just outright hate, and even having them on screen is uncomfy.
I wish she would just lean into the, like, villain type persona, but I just don't think she realizes that's how she comes across.
But that's what makes her so compelling, right? There's this mismatch between how she sees herself and how apparently everybody else out there sees her.
Because she's messy, but in a genuine way. And comes full circle.
And that's always what we want. So the Davids have this big bag of tricks, and it turns out they're going to use the vote seal and the idol nullifier. I was thinking, though, when you know that Christian, I assume that at this point they do know that Christian has this idol. I wonder if it's better to use that if they know that he's going to be receiving votes again. Because going into next week, where you hope it's going to be 5-5, assuming none of your guys flip, none of their guys flip, then you're going to need something to overturn that. And the idol can. Like, if you play it on the right person at the right time, then it's fine. But the vote seal for that one exact scenario is better, right? That is more powerful, because it means it guarantees that you have a majority and you don't have to hope to hit the right person.
Yeah, that is a very good point. I feel like they went with what they thought was a sure shot. Maybe they were a little bit more misled about where the Goliath votes were going this time. Maybe they thought that that Christian would be a misdirect and that they didn't really know where to put the idol. So they thought that this would be a better bet, but I don't know. I think you make a good point.
Last time they apparently voted for Christian because they knew that the votes were going on Christian because like four different people separately came and told Nick, because everyone loves Nick apparently out there. And he was able to just compare notes and tie all the stories together and take that back to Christian. I imagine after he pulls that on them the first time, they're going to be a little less loose-lipped about it this time around. So maybe they just didn't know and they assumed this didn't work out last time, so we'll try and fake them out. We'll go for one of the other David instead. So I guess it is a lot more risky. So just take the sure thing and be happy about it.
Yeah, but I think it would have been more fun if they had maybe targeted someone other than Dan and not, you know, use the idol nullifier there, and then it still would have been around for when there's an inevitable crack in the Davids, and then, you know, Carl has to try and get Christian out or something else later on when someone else finds an idol. I feel like they could have gotten through this week using just one advantage instead of two.
Yeah, I guess when you've seen so many advantages in the past either be misplayed or just not get played at all and someone walks out with the advantage in their pocket, it's got to be so tempting to use it when you know you have a clear shot and you know that that is going to be effective, right?
Yeah, and it's got to be that. And it's also, you know, the longer that you hold on to it, the more threatening that becomes as the other ones are played. So it adds up, but they definitely could have saved some of that firepower for next week.
Yeah, that's a good point, I think. So that covers most of the episode. Do you have any just general takes, or I guess if there are specific characters or moments or anything else that you've been bursting at the seams to talk about and haven't had a chance to until now?
The only thing that I haven't talked about, and it's really stupid, is I finally noticed this time that Dan has a friggin' anchor tattoo. I just wanted it to be on the record that anchor tattoos are the stupidest thing in the world.
It is like a positive thinking kind of thing?
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
I definitely don't approve of that.
Yeah, I can't relate.
What other stuff, positive or negative, comes to mind for you about the season, the players, or anything else?
Gabby is a national treasure and she needs to be protected, and if people are gonna talk about her crying, they can come fight me because she's apparently crying all the tears that I don't cry.
Which nation is this? Is this the US, or we steal her for ourselves?
I wish we could steal her. I guess she's technically an international treasure, though. You're right. Kara is great. I just feel like we've been so blessed and we need to appreciate what we've got right now, because there's no way that every season can be this good as we've seen in the past.
Because preseason, people were concerned that, you know, we had Lynn Spillman getting fired or something happening there. And there was a real lack of hype around the season, not just from Jeff Probst, but from the fan base at large, and there was less preseason content, and it really felt like they were running this one off before it had even begun. Now we're seeing what might be the best season in years. Like the consensus seems to be best season in the 30s, and far beyond that too, for in some cases. So that makes me think season 38 is really going to shit the bed, and I'm worried that whatever positive feelings we have now, in 6 months' time, we're going to be just slogging through a return to the Dark Ages potentially.
Do you think in the spring we could just rewatch David versus Goliath instead? Like, we could just all collectively decide.
What if they just air Survivor Maryland and pretend that it's season 38?
I mean, they should. That would be honestly ideal.
They might notice a change in location, but I feel like you can... Austin and Jeff are... I mean, Austin doesn't age. He looks decently like Jeff. We can dress it up. I think we can make it work.
I honestly... The average person who's just sitting on the couch watching their TV probably doesn't pay enough attention to know. And then anyone who really cares is going to love it anyways. So it's fine.
So I think we've cracked the code. We know what they need to do now. I guess we'll finish this out. Actually, before we do that, do you want to advertise yourself on social media? Where should people be finding you? And what type of hashtag content should they be sending you?
Oh, okay, perfect. So you can find me on Instagram or Twitter at Kirsten Said What. You can expect me basically to be mean for the most part and post pictures of my cats. And please send me pictures of your cats. And then you can also, if you care about trash television, I'm over on Kowski Cast. That's Cow with a K, talking about Riverdale every week. So that's always a hot mess.
I would echo the first part of that. I'm not mean. I'm delightful. But if you want to send me pictures of your cats, then please do. I would definitely welcome that. But on that note, you can find me at DomHRV. And I guess we'll dive into the edit zone very quickly. Although I don't really have anything to say. It feels like everyone's on the same page this week.
Yeah, there's really not a lot.
So I guess instead of debating like who's first, who's second, who's third, I guess if we agree that Kara's in the number one spot, does anyone else, is anyone even in the mix for you still? Like, who would be the second and third, even if they're quite far down on the podium?
Well, I feel like it's still, you know, Nick at number two, and then no one else is really. And I feel like Christian and Gabby will also go far, maybe a case for Davey. But as far as winning and, or even getting second place, I feel like there's not that much of anybody.
So it's a two-horse race, as you say, or a two-thoroughbred race.
Well, I don't even think it's a two-horse race. I think it's a one-horse race, like, but there's another person who's like kind of close.
You have someone like in a horse outfit training behind, hoping they don't get noticed.
Yeah, so we've got one person, you know, riding a horse, and we've got one person who's in one of those inflatable ostrich jockey costumes.
Yeah, we've got someone wearing the BoJack Horseman-like Halloween outfit, just trotting along, making a good effort of it, but ultimately we know how it's going to end.
Exactly. And yeah. I'm fine with it.
I just wonder what the reaction is going to be to this consensus around Kara, because I don't know if this season is spoiled. I hope it's not. As far as I know, there's nothing like concrete out there. But there's going to be echoes of the Michelle thing from Ko Rong, where it felt like everyone jumped on board with that so quickly. And the people who didn't see it didn't see why, and they assumed either those people were spoiled or they were all in this collective fantasy, and it was just hard to bridge the gap and like let them see what we saw. And I don't know if we're gonna have the same effect here with Kara.
I also feel like after the whole Michelle situation, a lot of people who were watching and maybe looking at the edit look at the edit in a different way now after watching that. So maybe it will be less jarring. And I also feel like Kara hasn't been, you know, forced on us as much. Like, there haven't been any scenes of her where you're like, this seems crazy out of place.
Yeah. And also, like, it's, what is it now? Episode 9, episode 10?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Michelle thing was episode 4, episode 5. So we've had as much time again before we got to this point. And this is the point in the season where you expect to have a front runner, or you expect to start really narrowing things down. So maybe Kara's not the person that they land on, but it's not surprising to see other people going through the same process, I guess.
Yeah, we've had more time to come to this conclusion. It's been a little bit more of a holistic season.
In Ko Rong, I think it was tied up with the Michelle versus Aubrey debate that rages to this day in some parts, where if you, I think there were a lot of people who were really cheering hard for Aubrey and thought she deserved to win, and that bled into thinking that she was going to win, that she was going to have this winner's edit, which I understood why they thought that, but I thought the signs were clearly there. Whereas this time, I don't know who the alternative even is. Like, who are people expecting to win or hoping is going to win instead? You're not going to have this like religious conflict breakout after the season.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it too. I feel like it's been a few years and people are still upset about Aubrey versus Michelle, which is just insane to me, who has that much time to be upset about it still. But yeah, there's no like fervor around any of the people on this cast. Like, I feel like there's no one that has that like fanatic following. So it hopefully won't cause as much of a conflict after.
Maybe. I think we have the time because we're 80 minutes into a Survivor podcast where we mostly just complain about things. But yeah, but by and large,
I just don't understand why you have to keep attacking me.
I'm attacking myself too. I don't have anything better to do. As I said to you before, like, I would say I had plans for Friday, but I don't. And you know that. And so does everyone else at this point. So,
okay, Friday night plans are overrated because you're tired from the longest week of all time. It's better to just be well-rested and to just attack your Saturday, okay?
Where would Friday come on the days of the week ranking for you?
I mean, it's still top half. It's not at the bottom. That would be just insane. But it's probably like third or fourth on the list.
Okay. Do we have the same philosophy of any work day is at the bottom and any leisure day is at the top? Because somehow there are people who disagree with that.
No, we're on the same page. I feel like it goes Saturday, Sunday, Friday.
Sure. In my defense, like, I just moved here, so it's fine if I'm without plans. But if I'm saying the same thing in 6 months, then I'm going to have to sit myself down and have a talk with myself, because, you know, we can't be having that.
I don't think you need to put the pressure on yourself to always have plans on a Friday night. You can just have a plans sometimes on a Friday. Like, you're going to be fine.
And if those plans are...
Canadians are very welcoming.
If those plans are podcasting, then that's valid and no one can say otherwise.
I mean, as far as anybody else knows, I'm going to say, yeah, I met up with a friend for coffee on Friday and they have no way to verify it because none of them are listening to podcasts.
Which maybe is for the better in some cases. But for me, that will be the end of Canadian Thanksgiving. Do you have anything else that you want to truck in there at this stage?
No, just thanks for having me. I really appreciate all of the Americans who are busy with Thanksgiving so that I was invited.
Well, thank you for coming on. And once again, people can find you at Kirsten Said What on various platforms. They can find me at Dom HRV. You can find Colin Stone, not on Instagram yet, Colin, but on Twitter at Colin Stone. We really need to get him to correct that. I feel like he would, the gram needs him. But
what if we just make Colin an Instagram? And then just post on it for him, get it started, and then eventually he can just take it over.
We don't even have to tell him yet. We can just do it, and then, yeah. So go out there, follow at Colin Stone on Instagram, and you will be handsomely rewarded.
Someone else already has at Colin Stone. That's really why he doesn't have Instagram, because he can't get the same username.
That's not an excuse. No. We can have like...
So on Instagram, you can follow at @cstone_.
Yes. You got in there first, but that sounds like a good plan to me. And you can find us, or at least you can find me and hopefully Colin, back next week for another episode. For now, though, we'll talk to all of you again next week. Take care, everyone.